The way I look at risk is financial risk and the ability of someone that you don't want from taking your property. The banking system takes advantage of people. They all work together, including the court system. In fact, I would say that we don't even have a court system anymore. You're not going to get a fair hearing. What's happening is our court system is making money through cases that are filed by the banking system. But they're creating value by people being in prison. And then that bond is nothing more than a mortgage. And that, again, is sold into or sold as a safe investment for these pension funds. So it's just a way to steal pension funds around the world and get away with it. Yeah, it's painful. And when I first started getting a glimpse of this way back in the early 90s, I actually rejected the information. I thought, no way, there is no way that this can be happening. And it kept finding me, like the information wouldn't go away.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today I have John Singleton coming to the program, and he's going to educate us on how a business owner can get equal footing with the big corporate guys, with the big banks. And this is really good information. This is what the banking sector has been doing forever. The wealthy, the elite have been doing forever. And he's sharing with the general business folks, how do we compete on an equal footing? I got to tell you that a business person has absolutely no consumer protections. There are consumer protection rights for consumers. Business owners have none. What's zero? And in fact, in my state, when I got involved with this really corrupt bank, I learned that no one has won a fraud case in over a decade against banks. The law is so stacked against you, nobody wins. No one wins. They're trying to get it to be a little bit better now, but it's still essentially like that. And they are ruthless. They will go after, and you'll hear, John saw these situations. They'll sue your neighbor. They'll actually sue your 10-year-old. They'll do all sorts of stuff to harass you and bully you, to scare you to do what they want you to do. And so he's teaching people how to protect your assets and how to compete on an equal footing with them. And he also talks about how to use the dark web and what the dark web really is. It's not this scary beast that they make it out to be. It's just something where Google doesn't track. And that's what all big businesses have private networks. It's a private network. It's just you're not in the Google database. Very interesting information. And he explains it all. And then he sticks around for my patrons. Patrons, it's $1 a month. If you can't afford it, let me know. I will send you the information. I know every so often somebody really wants what I have and they can't afford $1 a month. And of course, if you can afford more, I'd appreciate it. And he sticks around for patrons and I ask him, what is the single most question that people ask you? And, you know, please give us the answer to that. And he says that the single most question that people ask is, how do you do it? What do you really do? And so he gives some tips on how you actually set something up to get around this. So if you're interested in that, please go to my Patreon account. And before we get into the interview, I do want to tell you that this is right up my wheelhouse. I dealt with this. I dealt with a corrupt bank. I dealt with a bunch of criminals. And so if I get a little bit excited and I interrupt, I know people hate it when I interrupt, but this is something I spent years studying and researching. So I do have some valuable information that I can share, and he is an expert. And so I will ask questions that I know are relevant, and I don't want him to go any farther before a question is answered. And otherwise, you don't have a basis for the next stuff that he's talking about. So just to know that, please don't put in the comments, don't interrupt, all this other crap. That's why I'm doing it. So you have it. Let's get into that interview now with John Singleton. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sarah.
Well, I wanted to bring you on because you have such a fascinating business that you do. You work with people to help them, well, save money, protect their assets, but you do it in a very private way, and you also use the dark web as one of your tools. Can you explain at a high level what it is that you actually do?
Sure. I look at risk for consumers and for small businesses. And risk, and the way I look at it, is not about a hurricane's going to blow your house down. The way I look at risk is financial risk and the ability of someone that you don't want from taking your property. So in my world, risk would be a lawsuit, then that lawsuit, a judgment being used to levy property, cash, and what other would be available, like real estate, for example. So what I do is I make it so that the cash flow or cash or property cannot be levied, even though our banking system eliminates any privacy we have, right? There's no privacy. Anybody who signs on the account, you got to give up your SSN, your date of birth, all this other sort of thing, your ID, two forms of ID. What I do is I make it so that the signature card on the account precludes creditors from taking the money that's in the account. So I could do this for $1 million, $10 million, $50, it doesn't matter. I also use different strategies. Like, for example, I just set up a company for a gentleman who's involved in the hemp industry. So there's a lot of controversy with that right now. So he needs a particular structure. So I set up two different companies, one that manages the cash flow and the other one that handles all the licensing requirements for the company. So I've separated out his risk. So I've separated his cash flow from the functioning of his business. So that way, if he ever has a problem in the future where someone wants to, let's say, sue his business, they're not going to sue the business that has any money. They would just sue the dead business that just has the licensing, meets all the licensing requirements.
Well, and I'd like to dive into this a little bit more because, as you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I've built a company. And what I learned through my process of dealing with crooked banks and everything else is that consumers have a little bit of protection through the Consumers Act and things, but small business owners have zero, none.
Zero.
None at all. And so you are like a sitting duck out there and big corporations want to take you out. Whereas the consumer has a little bit, I mean, you're actually helping people get to that point where what a consumer usually has is protection.
That's correct. The consumer was the biggest demographic of what I've been doing for the last 25 years. Some of which I got into the small businesses, but really you're right. The federal statutes. Okay. We're talking about Title 15 in the federal code. That has all the consumer protection laws in it. And yeah, they are useful. I try to make it to where the protections I set up clients with don't rely on a statute. Because if you rely on a statute, then you've got to go into court and defend it. You've got to have people that are willing to do it. And sometimes you have to rely on attorneys if that's the case. And I don't like to rely on attorneys. Like, here's an example. Let's say someone gets sued for $1 million. Well, maybe he has lots of money. Let's say he has several million dollars and he gets sued for lots of money. Well, he would be inclined to hire an attorney and he'd spend $100,000 and let's say he won. Well, he just spent $100,000 to win. But now what? All the risk is still there. So what I do is I remove the risk. So if he's sued, he can decide, well, I'm not going to have to hire an attorney because I don't have the risk. I don't have anything to protect. And also I don't have to pay the attorney because I'm already protected. I've already won basically.
Well, I know businesses won't go after you or people won't go after you if they don't think they have any money they can get. And that's important. You know, it's a strategy that you can use to make sure they don't go after you. Now it seems almost dishonest, but if you compare it to big corporations, executives and everything, they're completely disconnected from the company.
And yeah, the whole system is right.
Yeah. Whereas small businesses, it's the only area where you are just completely on a limb. And then when you have to sign all those personal guarantees, you are hosed for years.
You are. And I tell people, if you owe for professional service, whether you're the business owner or a consumer, if you borrow money from, let's say, your Uncle Bob, I like to say, or your grandma or a friend or a real partner who actually put his cash up, you should work that out. You should pay it. If you have a medical bill that you owe the physician money, you should pay it. But when it comes to a debt collector or a banking member, right, a member of the banking community, those people didn't risk anything. The banking system is designed to make money if you don't pay. So that's where I'm focused, the risk, you know, eliminating the risk. I'm not trying to stiff, you know, grandma, you know, for her lending you some money for your business.
Well, and also all your suppliers, all your employees, you know, a lot of people don't believe in taxes, but to a certain degree, you your local taxes, your property taxes, things that go to the schools. I mean, you have to be an upstanding citizen to be able to run a business in your community. But if something bad happens and you run into a snake at a bank, which I did personally, and it destroyed my company, at least the bank went down and so did the contractor. But this would have helped me, and it didn't. They were trying to go after everything, but I figured we out-strategized. Well, we didn't out-strategize. We just hung in there and tried to survive. But this would have helped me.
Right. Yeah. If you don't have, I look at it like this. When I'm done with a client, it takes anywhere from 3 months to a year. When I'm done working with a client, he basically looks like he's a homeless person. I make it so he looks like he has nothing. But if he needs a balance sheet for something, he can use one of his companies. But he doesn't need to have, except for with some exception, I just have some people making, like let's say a person makes $1 million a year, but he only needs $50,000 a year to get by. Well, then that's all he's going to get paid. The rest of the money he still controls, but he doesn't get to go into his bank account.
It's so like he's an true employee. He's a true employee. Now, my question is it sounds really shady. Why is this legal?
It does sound shady. Because if you went to an attorney, you know, the attorney's going to have his list of remedies. There are great attorneys that do asset protection and estate planning and this sort of thing. But very seldom would they do some of the things that I do. Like, for example, I'll set up a debt that will block other creditors. So, people say, well, it's shady. Well, the whole system is shady. And everything I do, okay, the people that really research into the strategies, they ask me this question ultimately. They say, well, wouldn't this be considered a fraudulent conveyance? Because they see that we're going to get away with something, right? Well, I'm not trying to get away with something. And anything I do is not going to be considered a fraudulent conveyance under the existing statutes and the case law. It's designed to make, it works kind of like this. Let's say you borrowed money and then you can't pay it. What I do is I create a situation where it looks like you borrowed money and then you paid the second creditor, but you didn't pay the first creditor. And it's completely legal to do that. So the only question for you is it moral? Like, would you do that to your grandma, right? Or would you do it to the bank? The reason why I even started this was because the banking system takes advantage of people. They all work together, including the court system. In fact, I would say that we don't even have a court system anymore. You're not going to get a fair hearing. What's happening is our court system is making money through cases that are filed by the banking system. So the court system takes the case and securitizes it and assists the bank in making money. Even though the court's supposed to be impartial and the court's not truly invested with the bank, the court is acting like a broker dealer. And if you want to look up that term, you'll see. So what I've done is create a situation that makes it fair now.
I agree with you. Because people don't realize when you get into business. In my situation, there wasn't a single fraud case won against a bank in our state in over a decade. I mean,
that's every case is fraud.
Yeah,
every case. I mean, they should be arresting people left and right.
I know. And so this is like, how do you protect yourself when you're in a battlefield? And we know that small business is so important. Now, what happens when you run across somebody who really is kind of crooked? I mean, do you really, there's one thing about protecting upstanding businesses, really, you know, right? Because that's what we want to do. We don't want, but what do you do when you get a crooked person?
Well, bank?
Like, let's say you have a drug dealer that wants to use your services.
I don't help those people. If I find out that the person I'm helping has done something, you know, illegal, I mean, it's not going to be so blatant. Obviously, if it's that blatant, I'm not going to help. I'm just going to tell that person, you got to go, you know, ask someone else for help.
Just a quick break from the program to tell you about another summit that's coming up, and it's about ketones. And everybody, the rage has been about ketones because it helps burn fat and reduce inflammation. They have a series of videos that are going to start May 7th. And what you will learn is how ketones help you burn fat for energy, reduce inflammation, and how they may help prevent and eradicate diabetes, cancer, autoimmune deficiencies. And what you'll learn in this health summit is, what is ketosis? How does it work? And how to separate fact from fiction? How to overcome the challenges of being keto adapted? Whether you should start a keto diet or not, how to shop, live, and eat in a ketogenic lifestyle, and how you can do keto, whether you're a meat eater, a vegetarian, or vegan even. So I will have that information below. Sign up before the Health Summit starts on May 7th if you want access to discounts. Me, for one, I want a way to be able to burn more fat. Trust me, as I get older, it's becoming harder and harder. So let's get back into our interview now.
I have had people call me up after reading my book or something, or talking to people, and say, this is great. Wow, I love it. Look, I can get all kinds of credit. I could probably dump about $80,000 in credit card debt. I actually had a guy who did this. He was a journalist, I think, of all people. He was in the newspaper, but, and he thought it was just a great idea to just accumulate all this consumer debt and then just not pay it and then come to me and get help to protect himself against the collections. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm only going to help people that are surprised by their debt situation, that were innocently, they didn't see it coming. I'm going to fix that situation. If they use those strategies for the rest of their life, they'll be fine. But they shouldn't be used, you know. I mean, it's still not
wrong. That's not the point. The point isn't to get away from stealing. Yeah, the point is to protect yourself in a very corrupt banking system. Like I said, if nobody wins a fraud case in decades, how are you supposed to protect yourself?
Well, you just have to stop participating, really. So what does that mean? Like, this is what I tell people. Why are we getting 30-year mortgages? Where did that ever come into our existence? 30-year mortgages? That's nuts. The only person to benefit from a 30-year mortgage is the issuer, because the issuer is taking that mortgage and using it as leverage to steal pension funds in foreign countries. That's really what
the mortgage is. How do they do that? That's very interesting.
Okay, you take all these mortgages, and this is how they did it recently. Okay, you saw in what these, there's a couple of movies that explain some of this stuff. But basically, you take a 30-year receivable that's secured by real property, where a person has to go work at a job to pay it. Okay, that's the best security you can have. 30-year obligation on real estate. And you collect thousands of those documents, and you then classify it as an instrument of, let's say it has value. Let's say it has a value of $10 million, and they break apart these, they collect all these mortgages together, and then they break them apart into different groups, and they label each group as having a certain class with a certain value, okay? So then the brokers of all these instruments go to all the pension funds around the world, and they solicit the pension funds to buy into these instruments, buy into these securities, let's call them, because the return is stable. It's a mortgage. How can you not go wrong with a mortgage? Well, the whole thing's been undermined for like the last 20 or 30 years, probably 40 years. So at some point, which we're heading to very soon, we've already seen a little bit, a glimpse of it, we're heading to a point where these mortgages, well, pretty much they're almost worth nothing now, but pretty soon the other countries, the other pension funds are going to realize they're worth nothing if they haven't already. And so that's the game.
Well, and this is because the mortgages that was being underwritten had so little value because they were very high at-risk mortgages. And then they mix them together and they figured they'd create the AAA by putting a bunch of crap mortgages together.
Yeah.
And then that's what was, the pension funds were investing in that. And then when that whole thing went down, they'd lose their pension funds.
And that was just a test. What you don't realize is, okay, the mortgage thing is pretty easy to understand. The system has always done this with credit card receivables. Okay, the credit card debt, asset-backed securities, and mortgage-backed securities. Credit card debt, they've also done it with prison bonds.
What do you mean with prison bonds?
Prison bonds. The prison system makes more money than any other industry.
Is that why they want so many people in prison?
Yes, yes.
It's so disturbing.
Anytime someone gets incarcerated, a system of bonds are issued on that individual, and he becomes the surety for the bonds. The prisoner is the surety for the bonds. Now, I don't understand how they can make money with this, because I don't think that way. But they're creating value by people being in prison. And then that bond is nothing more than a mortgage. And that, again, is sold into or sold as a safe investment for these pension funds. So it's just a way to steal pension funds around the world and get away with it.
God, that's so evil.
It's like
so evil. Well, it's because I know how abusive the prison system and how they funnel people into it. And then now that I know that the more people they have in it, the more money they make with the, being red pilled is not a fun process.
Yeah, it's painful. And when I first started getting a glimpse of this way back in the early 90s, I actually rejected the information. I thought, no way, there is no way that this can be happening. And it kept finding me, like the information wouldn't go away. And I finally said, you know, I'm just going to have, and back, this is back before the internet was so friendly, you know, it was like a bunch of bulletin boards, right? With a little prompt, right? Yeah. Your little cursor, blinking cursor. So what I did is I just went to the law library and I just read everything I could find. And I was like, wait a minute, why do we need 38 books to tell me about filing a 1040? Why do we need all this stuff, right? So I started looking and seeing that the tax system is there to underpin the banking system. In fact, the tax system is the banking system. Without it, the banking system wouldn't exist.
Well, taxes were created when the Federal Reserve Act came on board. But the other thing about taxes that I've learned is that taxes is how we manipulate, or they create social, you know, they manipulate society, because that's, it's right, very difficult for them to get taxes through normally. And that's what people think, taxes are so boring, and they are, and they hate taxes. But what you don't realize is most of the laws they don't deal with. They do it all through the tax system. And that's how they get people to do what they want to do.
That's right. It is for regulating society, manipulating people to making decisions. Yes.
It really is. And I had the assistant tax directory under Bush on my show, and Alan Walensky. And he went on about that. He goes, this is what the whole thing is about. I mean, it's all about that. And so the people running the tax system have a lot of power.
They do. And, you know, this recent news about the cryptos, and I wrote some articles on this. I should probably send you some of them, but the cryptos, okay. Here's how the system works briefly. And again, it's a banking function. Okay, so you put the news out about cryptos are now being taxed. Well, that was after the IRS forced Coinbase and Kraken and all these wallets, you know, these centralized wallets to give up their client data. In fact, I read the cases on this. Coinbase fought pretty well. Coinbase went into the U.S. District Court and said, hey, the IRS is just fishing for information and we don't have to give it to them. And eventually they funneled it down to a point where basically the IRS took over Coinbase through the Financial Crimes Network.
Mm.
Okay.
So figuring it out. Their goal is to tax these cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, but they can't. See, here's the thing. You can't tax a crypto, but no more than the United States can't tax a crypto any more than they can tax your shoe.
But how are they now? They were able to so what happened when they won these? They got these clients.
Well, they got the data. They got the client data. So, which means they got your SSN and your ID if you gave it to Coinbase. Which is interesting because you don't really need to give it up. You can move money into the cryptos in many different ways. You can use BitShares. You can use BitSquare. These are decentralized exchanges. And they hook you up with someone else who can make a similar exchange, who wants to trade with you. And you can do that outside the system, so to speak. You don't need Coinbase. But Coinbase is basically surveillance for the Financial Crimes Network. So everyone using Coinbase is basically a suspect in a crime under Title 18. That's how it operates. So fine. So the way I look at it is like this. Use Coinbase if you're just learning. Get your money into the cryptos and stay in the cryptos. Why go back into the dollar? Why treat it like a stock? Right? Stay in the cryptos. Maybe you need dollars for something. Well, if you do, find a way to make the transaction so it's outside that purview, so that you're not tagged. So the only time the cryptos aren't going to be taxed, it's going back into dollars that's going to be taxed. But here's the weird thing. How do you figure out what the tax is going to be? The government can say, here's the rate. But how do you know what the rate is if the cryptos are changing all the time with a dollar?
So the government's going crazy right now, trying to figure this out.
Okay, there's that aspect of it. Here's what's going on. Read all the news on tax on cryptos. Everybody's freaking out. They're asking all these questions. I get all these questions now. Am I doing this? Am I going to have to pay tax? And I always explain this. If you take your cryptos and your gain or whatever and you put it into dollars, yeah, there's a question of how much you owe on that tax. But here's the thing. The tax applies if there's a taxing statute. And there is no taxing statute. There's no new law regarding cryptographic currency because the government can't tax it. It can only tax Federal Reserve notes, U.S. dollars. And it can only tax when you realize a gain. But here's how I set up my client. I do a lot of protection. I avoid the risk and all this sort of thing. But one of the nice little benefits I set up with is I make it so that if he does realize a gain, let's say you got a nice gain in Bitcoin and you just want to put it in dollars and buy a house or something, or not that you couldn't buy the house in Bitcoin. Okay, you could do that. But then again, the IRS might say, well, you know, you got this nice house. Therefore, we're going to say it's worth this much in dollars and you have to pay taxes on it. You could realize the gain in a tax-deferred structure, which is very easy to set up. Basically, it's a company that is not, you know, it's acting in your behalf, right? So then the only tax consequence would be what the company pays you. So, you know, there are all kinds of ways to deal with this, but everyone gets so scared now because they think, in fact, I just had a question this morning on Skype. Somebody was asking me what her taxes would be because she has cryptos. And so I have to dial that in and say, well, tell me exactly what you're doing. Did you just put a bunch of money in the dollars? Because if not, you know, it's not there. And it goes into the other issue, like John McAfee was explaining recently. He's talking about the price of Bitcoin that he anticipates. And he says, nobody cares about Bitcoin anymore as far as privacy and this talk about money laundering and drug dealing. Bitcoin is not used for that. The dollar is used for that. What McAfee was saying recently is the Monero is what people are using for privacy in the cryptocurrency. And if you're using the Monero or using the dark web, you get into that aspect of managing your money. And it's so much easier to avoid risk if you're just keeping your money private.
Okay, well, let's talk about the dark web a little bit, because you use the dark web a lot and you think it is a better place to be. Now, what is the dark web and why do you like to use it as a tool?
Well, it means basically that it's not indexed like a .com website by Google.
So the dark web has this like really eerie, bad connotation. It just means that some corporation doesn't have it in their database.
Exactly. So the dark web has URLs that end in .onion instead of .com. And the .onions are not indexed. Moreover, the IP addresses are concealed for the most part. If you don't know what you're doing, they're not concealed. And the thing about the dark web, okay, the entire internet that we know of, okay, we know of 5% of the internet. The .com, .biz, .org, .gov, that website, all that web traffic, that's all 5% of the entire internet. So the other 95% is the dark web.
And that's corporate, private corporate networks and all that stuff.
It's everybody. It's everybody from the military to grandma who's selling Afghans.
Okay, yeah.
It's whatever you, I mean, you can go and set up a website on the dark web, and if you know a couple of things, right? You can then communicate with people, you can manage money, you can have a balance sheet on the dark web, you can run your business on it, you can process payments. I even set people up where they have, let's say they have a business where they might have a large ticket item for a sale. They might be wholesaling something. So instead of wholesaling $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, they might have a $1.2 million sale. Well, they can move that transaction onto the dark web, and it's completely separated from their business, and they have access to that money, and it's not done in the dollar. And I'll give you an example of how you would do that old school, right? Here's how it's done, actually. If I have a business in the States and I want to do something with someone in Ireland, another business over there, what we would do is set up a vault service in another country. I'm going to use Singapore as a great example, okay? You guys can look this up too. You go to Singapore, you set up a vault account, and you transfer money over to the vault service. Like, for example, you might use gold, or you might use silver or platinum, whatever you like to use. So you have a vault account, and the other party has a vault account, and you do your business that way, and you mark all your accounting in the denomination of what's in the vault. So it might be in gold or whatever. So you instruct your vault service to transfer so much gold or silver to the other party's account on closing. So the transaction takes place outside the United States, outside of Ireland. It's more or less international, even though it's in a third party country. And the transaction is not taxable and it's not visible.
Interesting. And to a certain degree, it makes a ton of sense just not to be, corporations set up dark networks all the time for this purpose. And it makes sense because you don't want Google to have all your information.
Well, I would go as far as this. What business is it of anyone as to who you associate with? What business is it of anyone who you go to church with or which church you go to? Likewise, what business is it of anyone what kind of money I use to get the goods I want? It's a First Amendment issue. It's a right of association.
I agree with all that. Now, how do you, for the people who have, they want to contribute in their society, you know, in their communities, and make sure they're, you know, we do have a city that, as long as you're living in a city who's not corrupt, you have a city that has a school, you have a city that have roads. I mean, you should be participating in that stuff. How do you make sure you're participating in that stuff, but keeping yourself out of the, I'm sorry, but the more I understand about federal taxes and all this crime and what we're doing, I can understand where people make decisions. But at the same standpoint, you can't, I don't believe in completely backing out of the system in that
Yeah,
way.
I mean, it's in our face every day, and we created it. I mean, people say we criticize the government, but actually we're the government. We have to realize that we
Exactly.
are the government. Yeah. So how do we fulfill our responsibility as government, the people who created it? Yeah, I agree. I mean, so, okay, what do you do? Well, be involved. Like, for my family, okay, I get to speak for myself in that sense. Personally, I homeschool my children. I pay as little taxes as possible. I wouldn't go and get a bar license because that requires a whole new set of regulations. I'm involved with the DEA then and things like that. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just my choice. I don't want to do something like that. I want to make money somewhere else. I would get involved with whatever local community you're dealing with, like especially your neighbors. I mean, who talks to those neighbors anymore? Hardly anybody does that anymore. I would go to city council meetings. I would go to county commissioner meetings. I might be on the county commissioner. Why not? You know, why not go to take on that role for a couple of years or for a term and get involved and make sure or get involved with an audit. Look at the balance sheet for your county or your city. Get involved with it. Don't just pay your taxes and feel like your duty is done.
But don't you think that we are so trained to get ready for a technocracy that you're kind of unwinding the technocracy and saying, hey, we never used to have to deal with this. Why suddenly do you feel that you have to now?
Right. Well, the technocracy, yeah, that's another thing too. And when you try to, I've made this mistake. I try to explain it to people, and the problem is it's so far removed from their existence that they just can't relate to it and they think I'm nuts. So you could pick
okay, well,
an item from it.
Tell us you're nuts. I mean, tell us, because
Oh,
I've got a
yeah.
lot of listeners that I'll understand.
I don't care about that. But they
No,
don't listen
no,
to
no,
that.
Don't tell us you're nuts. Tell us your story, and I think a lot of people will understand.
Okay, all right. I went to the point, my wife thinks I'm nuts. I went to the point of trading my nice i7, my iPhone, right, for this brand new Nokia 3310. They just made it. It's not like an old phone. It's a brand new, I got it firsthand from the supplier. But it's a 3G technology. It's
a
not
lot of
5G.
People want that.
Okay, the 5G technology is going to be used to conduct surveillance. Let me give you an example of how it works. A Wi-Fi 5G router in your house is like turning the lights on, although you can't see the lights are on. And by that, I mean the police have technology. I'm not saying that you should be scared of the police, but just as an example, the police have technology where they could sit outside of your front of your house in a car and aim a device at your house. And they can see everything inside your house as if there was no front wall.
And that's the infrared kind of
yeah,
X-ray.
Yeah, that's Wi-Fi technology. It's better
oh,
than
it's
infrared.
Wi-Fi. Okay, interesting.
No, they can even see your face. It's like a photo. It's like
Great.
A video.
Okay, so can you tell us where we can get these 3G phones?
Yeah, I just shopped around for a 3G phone that's compatible with my AT&T network until I found Nokia. Now, there's some other things, too. You can get some open source software and put it on your phone to encrypt your phone. That's pretty good stuff. But what I was looking at is the dangers of the EMF technology. So when you talk about this move towards the automated society with the
technocracy.
The technocracy. Yeah, I read the whole book on it. I can't remember. Why can't I think of the name? The technocracy. It's the 5G frequency that I want to get away from. And the problem is I can do it on my house. Like I can seal off my smart meter, which I did. I put a screen over there with a hose clamp on it, so that kills the Wi-Fi from broadcasting. It only does the job that it's supposed to do. It doesn't. It's
oh,
not
excellent.
Able to. Yeah, I do
you
that.
You want
for
it
my
to do its
too.
Job, but don't survey.
Right.
Yeah.
Bill me for my power, but don't collect data from my toaster and my TV. Because that's
exactly.
what it's doing. That your smart meter is collecting data from everything in your house.
Yeah, but it's so hard. I mean, the majority of the people are just going to be. Technocracy victims, they're going to think that
yeah.
anything they don't do that lets the government completely, you know, get into their life, they're going to be criminals. I mean, they think
yeah.
that. And it's a whole paradigm and a mind shift to say, wait a minute, this is our freedom. This is not what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why, you know, so the nice thing about the cryptos and the internet is really augmented what I'm able to do for people as far as money goes and money and property rights. So avoiding the dispute is the big thing. You can avoid the dispute. Like I used to send letters to debt collectors and IRS and argue with them and stuff. And it's just a waste of time. And I'm billing the client for what? In the end, they're going to take his stuff. So then I finally realized back in the late 90s, I'll just create it so the client already doesn't have anything.
Well,
how do you do that?
I can appreciate it. And I think people who haven't been through the, actually worked with the really corrupt banking system, or, you know, what I actually personally dealt with, they might be scared of some of this, but I got to tell you, when you're dealing with a corrupt system that's so stacked against you, you don't even have any consumers. You have no rights whatsoever as a small business owner. None. How else can you protect yourself?
Yeah, you got to disappear, basically. You've got to make your property rights disappear. And this is how I set up the bank account. Even though the person I'm helping is a signer on the account, I make it so that the signature rights on the account preclude a creditor from taking the money. And I'll give you an example. I just helped a guy the other day. He had a million, $1.5 million judgment. They're collecting against him. So before I started helping him, I said, look, they're going to take your stuff. So set up your accounts. Make sure that your bank accounts – he's a multimillionaire, but I said – make sure your bank accounts don't have any real money in there, like 10 bucks or something, what you're willing to lose. So he did that. And then I said, and I gave him all the other setup, and I showed him, we set up several other bank accounts the right way. And he said, it was like 2 weeks ago, he said, hey, they just levied all my accounts, but they didn't touch the other accounts that we just set up. It's like they took everything except the accounts we just set up. They're like, they didn't exist.
They don't even care if you're destitute and poor on the streets and can't even feed yourself. They'll take every dime you have.
They don't care at all. The judgment. They want the judgment. And this is what I figured out. Like you said earlier, like some creditors will not pursue a collection if it doesn't make sense. Well, the banks will. The banks will go after you for $12. Because for them, the $12 is worth probably $250 or more, because they just want a piece of paper that says they have a judgment lien against a human being with a birth certificate. Once they have that, it means money. It's like money in the bank for the bank. Just having the judgment, they don't need your money.
So why are most of these judgments happening against people that you represent? Is it pretty much like a deal that went south, or is they got in?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's so many things that happen in small business that are, you can do everything right and still get yourself into it.
That's right. Just out of morbid curiosity, I always ask for the contract. When someone asks me for help, I say, just send me the contract, because lots of times I don't even care what's going on with the creditor. All I care about is the client's risk, right? But I have them send me the contract. You would not believe the garbage these are in these contracts. I mean, these contracts, when I say garbage, I mean terms in there that take any risk the creditor would have and transfer it to the borrower.
Yeah, even if they do something criminal, it's still your fault. That's
Absolutely.
What I ran into. I ran into total criminal behavior, and it was my fault.
Yeah. Yeah, they make it to where these contracts make it to where the creditor, like a bank, has the power of government. I mean, I've even seen contracts where you're agreeing to waive the statute of limitations. You agree to a binding arbitration, which is another interesting thing I could tell you about real quick. Way back in, about 15 years ago, almost 20 years ago, it was Citibank and it was MBNA, back when it was called MBNA. They had this scheme, I call it, this scheme going where they would insert binding arbitration clauses in all the credit card agreements. And you had a law firm by the name of Walpoff and Abramson that was promoting binding arbitration to add to the credit agreements, to the consumer credit agreements. So what was happening is we lost our ability to fight the thing in court. So that's why I came up with this new system.
Yeah, binding arbitration, people don't understand. The arbitrators are so against you that you're hosed.
Oh, they just look at it and say, oh, this is another one of those cases. You got to pay. Be quiet. You got to pay. So here's what we did.
And let me just add something to that, because what you're saying is important. But arbitrators who actually do what's right don't get hired again.
There you go. That's
and
the system.
That is what the research is showing. So keep going.
That's right. So here's what I did. I realized that. And I realized I couldn't go into court and fight it reasonably. Like, we would write up, the documents. We had a network of attorneys that would go in there, and they would just basically do what we said because we brought them the business. Well, it wasn't working. So here's what I decided to do. I created a business plan and I gave it away, and it turned out to where 9 other groups of people took up this business plan. And here was the business plan: create a binding arbitration forum and solicit people, consumers, to add those into their contracts the way the banks were adding their clauses into the contracts. So I did the same thing the banks were doing, but I wasn't doing it. I just distributed this all over the country. And there were 9 companies doing this while the banks were doing theirs. And we were getting millions of dollars in arbitration claims against all the banks now. We were going Citibank, Discover, Bank of America, Amex, all of them. We had like probably $10, $20, $30 million worth of arbitration awards against the banks.
You're kidding me. So what happened? That's the most interesting.
Well,
That's incredible. Keep going. Yeah.
Here's where it all came to an end, which is what I wanted. Now, notice how if you'll check, Citibank and none of the banks do this anymore. Here's what happened. It all imploded when one of our groups went into California in one of the counties, and there was one judge that handled all the abiding arbitration cases, okay? We brought in, he brought in, I think he said it was 980 arbitration awards against like Citibank and Discover and all of them. And the judge saw what was happening because he saw the whole docket, and he just got scared and said, oh my God, I can't rule on this. And
he literally
recused himself, and nothing happened with those except within a year, Wolpoff and Abramson was out of business. MBNA changed its name to FIA and probably some other name now. You don't hear about Wolpoff anymore. And Citibank dropped the whole thing. In fact, it was Citibank who, because I set this up, they tracked it back to me because I wrote a book on how to do it, right? So they tracked it back to me, and they knew they couldn't sue me. So what they did is they sued my neighbor. They found out where I live.
Why your neighbor?
They sued my neighbor.
It's like suing your 10-year-old.
And they sued my mother, my brother. Yes. And they try to harass me with litigation, right?
They sue. I've heard people who have had their 10-year-old daughters on trial.
Yeah, they wanted to know my children. So anyways, so that blew up too. But they got me into a deposition, which didn't help them at all. But anyways, so long story short, I did the same thing they did, and that imploded the whole system. And that's why we don't see it anymore. Because they were facing billions of dollars of losses. They couldn't get around it. I would have bankrupted all of them.
So then what happened? No judge would do it. And then they just shut their stuff down. But
they realized that I got him in checkmate, and they just said, okay, forget it. And Wolpoff stopped promoting it because Wolpoff was already being investigated anyways for promoting this. They shouldn't have been promoting it because they were a law firm. So that's how I looked at, instead of trying to fight on that legal, the details, right, the technicalities, I said, wait a minute, let's do what they're doing.
So what happened to their scam?
It ended. They can't do it. They won't do it. It's gone. So the only time I see binding arbitration is in a small business deal or a unique contract.
They still do it to small business owners all the time.
Small business, they're the ones that get stuck with everything. That's why I say I love getting those because I do what's called a reorganization plan. I restructure. Like, they could be getting sued by everybody. And what I do is I restructure the front-end cash flow so it now goes through a deferred structure. So they don't have more taxes. In fact, they have less taxes. Then I make it so that they can choose to pay their existing company. They do the same accounting as before. Their accountant does the same thing he did the previous year, except this time they now have protection against everybody, even the IRS.
Yeah, I wish I would have done that when I was starting out, because that you would have saved my behind.
That's
but, you know,
cool. The only thing I can't do is the regulations. You got the regulations out there. You know, I can't really get around that stuff. But as far as cash flow and property rights, that's pretty easy. That's pretty easy to
Well,
set
okay.
Up.
Well, how do people get hold of you?
Well, the best way is email and visit my website. I try to put a lot of articles up there. I have this thing right now where you can get 9 reports that explain all these little details. My email address is singletonpress@protonmail.com.
Okay.
So email is the best way.
And what's your website to go directly
it's
to those?
aceofcoins.com. And aceofcoins.com is a blog. So I try to put up, if I see a lot of things going on and I like to make comments, I don't like this crypto taxes, I'll write an article on it and publish it. And then people will ask me questions, and then I'll look at their situation and see, you know, if I can help them in that, whatever they're doing.
You have the coolest website though that I want to bring up. And I forgot to bring this up, where you track the values of every cryptocurrency. How many do you have up there?
Well, I look at whatever's being published, like cointracker.com. There's some websites that track all these things. So I mean, it's probably 90. I think the top 90 popular ones are up there.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining the program. I learned a lot from you. Awesome. We're going to have
Thanks,
you back
eventually
in the future here. If you will. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Hey, one last thing. Will you stick around and do a question for my Patreons?
Yeah, that'd be great. Sure.